Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A velodrome is a comparative rarity in American cities. St. Louis has one called Mr. Bumpy Face. We'll tell you why and why velodrome enthusiasts want to get rid of that name in just a couple of moments. But first, a look back at business news that made headlines during the past year. I'm joined by three St. Louis Public Radio reporters who cover this beat. With me is business and innovation reporter Maria Altman, and with our reporter newscaster colleagues Joseph Leahy and Wayne Pratt.
Thanks, guys, so
much for being here.
Good afternoon.
Nice to be here.
Maria, I'll start with you because today marks your 11th anniversary at St. Louis Public Radio.
Why did I tell you that?
Well, you told us just a few moments ago. Congratulations on your staying power.
Thanks very much.
Let's begin by getting your idea of what the top story that you covered during the past year was.
I think it was clearly the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency and where that agency is going to go. It's here in St. Louis now. They have 3,100 employees who give $2.4 million to the city of St. Louis each year in earnings taxes, so quite a bit of money. And the agency is looking around for a new home. The two top competitors are North St. Louis and St. Clair County across the river. And so it's sort of will it stay here in the city? 200 residents live within the 100 acres that they're considering in North St. Louis, or will they go across the river near Scott Air Force Base, where that county is offering up nearly 400 acres for free? So it's pretty competitive.
It's the old Pruitt-Igoe site, isn't it, that they're considering here?
It's just north of the old Pruitt-Igoe site. They initially kind of said it was the Pruitt-Igoe site, but really it's 100 acres north of that. So not exactly.
All right. Well, we can talk a little bit more about that in a moment or two. Wayne Pratt, let me come to you. What do you think the top story you were involved with this year was?
I'm going to cheat a bit. It's an overall heading of mergers and acquisitions. Yeah. And I think there's some fascinating stuff in there. Monsanto's courtship of Syngenta and how that fell apart, and that might be revived here, depending on what else may happen in that sector. Of course, AB InBev and SAB Miller, that has been a big deal for at least the last, 4 months, maybe a little less than that. And one that's kind of flown under the radar is Centene Corporation and HealthNet in California. That's still being played out with the regulators in that state. So a lot of the groundwork was laid for those stories this year, and they will be solved one way or another next year. So a combination, but that's kind of what I'm looking at.
Okay, and Joseph Leahy.
Well, in terms of scope, from what I've covered, I think the big story was MoDOT funding. Really, I mean, it just touches every corner of the state. MoDOT has been very, very clear that they need more funding, that, you know, they cannot maintain the system that is the seventh largest highway system in the U.S. Without more funding. In fact, in 2017, it's kind of a warning, maybe, you know, a bit of a threat that the MoDOT plans to fully maintain only about a quarter of the state's roads and bridges. Recently, you know, we may remember that a 1.5-cent fuel tax increase proposal failed in the legislature. Before that, voters rejected a 0.75-cent sales tax increase to help make ends meet for that reason. I think in the next year, we are going to see a lot of a lot stronger push to do something about, you know, the underfunded transportation system.
Yeah, I would point our listeners to our website, sdlpublicradio.org, and the interview that Marshall Griffin has done with the new head of MoDOT.
That's right, yeah.
And that aired today. And I guess I should have known this, but he pointed out there are more than 600 bridges in the state of Missouri that need attention, and seriously so.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, Patrick McKenna is the MoDOT's new director. He took over about 2 weeks ago, so he is just kind of getting his feet on the ground, it seems like. He comes from New Hampshire's transportation department as the deputy commissioner there. It was notable when he was announced as the new director that New Hampshire has lots of toll roads, and that seems to kind of make ends meet for them. So that will be kind of interesting to see how big of an advocate he will be here for toll roads, but he's also, you know, signals his support for fuel tax as well. I mean, it seems like that's where most people come to agree that the fuel tax, which is at 17 cents right now, could, and it hasn't changed in 20 years, could go up with that, with, you know, little political muscle. I mean, considering how low gas fuel taxes are. I mean, you know, gasoline is in general right now.
Yeah, whether he's an ardent advocate or not for toll roads, it still has to go through the state legislature.
That's true.
And they're not well disposed to take that up. I'm sort of surprised that the name IKEA, Maria, didn't come up during this first round. It got so much attention.
Yeah, it is a big deal. There's no question. I think we in St. Louis, there had been talk about IKEA for years and years, and it's a big deal to get the retailer here. And, you know, it 300 jobs, a nice big blue and yellow building that everybody sees when they drive by on I was going to say Highway 40, but I'm going to say Interstate 64. and I think it really shows that the Innovation District Cortex has some real power and some ability to attract big retail and some big names. And we also know that Square is going to add 200 positions within Cortex in the next year. Uber and Pandora added offices with just a few employees. Mm. But those are big names.
Do we have any sense of how IKEA is doing? It got off to a very fast start. I mean, people were just all over the place the first couple of days anyway.
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, judging by driving by it every single day and having gone there myself, I think they're doing just fine. And I think there was so much pent-up demand. So many people were driving to Chicago or going across the state to Kansas. There's an IKEA that's not in Kansas City proper on the Missouri side, but on the Kansas side, that I'm sure that they're doing well.
Yeah. Joseph, the last time you were on this program, we were talking about the traffic problems they were anticipating as a result of IKEA's opening. That never materialized into a big deal, did it?
No, nothing catastrophic. It's certainly when you drive through that area now, you definitely notice there are surges in traffic at certain times of day, and then also in surrounding major thoroughfares like Van Deventer and Grand. Also, this is more anecdotal, but I tend to avoid those streets at certain hours now because you just find yourself sitting at a stoplight for a little longer than you're used to. But, you know, I think the upgrades that were made before IKEA was completed, and then also some of the extra left turn lanes and new stoplights have really mitigated a lot of the issues. You know, IKEA, this isn't their first rodeo opening a new store, so they really, you know, were confident that they knew what they were doing. But, you know, I think that the IKEA is a big story more for what it represents for Cortex and for St. Louis. And I was hesitant to say that IKEA because, you know, who wants to make a big deal about a box store and all that? But it does represent kind of, to me, it's like the Cortex District as the Death Star becoming fully operational in a way. You know, like this is the point where it feels like the critical mass is gaining, that you've got Cortex just bought from Pace Properties across the street from IKEA a 3.5-acre lot, you know, for $3 million. You know, there's been a project there proposed for years about what to do with that as retail space. And now with Cortex, you know, owning a big parcel of it, it feels like there's definitely some momentum to keep moving forward on that. In addition, I think the Metrolink stop that's going to open up next year, I think that is really going to be the big critical thing. When you drive through the Cortex District now, you feel like, man, this is just about to be just bustling. I mean, there are buildings going up. There's a new Metrolink stop. And then, of course, you've got all the new folks visiting IKEA, in addition to all the little retail stores that are already popping up, like
Tim Hortons.
I was just going to mention.
Let the Canadian talk about that.
Well, let's bring the Canadian into the mix here. What do you think about Tim Horton coming in, Wayne Brett?
I think it's great. I grew up with it, obviously an hour outside Ottawa, and the community involvement in Tim Hortons, which seems to be underplayed whenever they expand into a U.S. market, is very interesting to take hold. Minor sports, from soccer to hockey up in Canada, and they have a hockey program here. They just seem to be everywhere once they get involved in the community. And I think that's one of the great things to have a Tim Hortons in your city. And they have an ambitious plan to expand over the next few years. I think they're on the verge of opening their third, if I'm counting correctly. So they're getting there. It'll be slow. As for the first one that opened, I wish it was bigger because every time I'm in there, I feel a little cramped. So that's a little unfortunate. But Take what you can get.
I am just advised, by the way, by Alex Hoyer, our producer, that March 2017 is the scheduled opening date for the Metrolink station.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
So it's not that far away. Okay, let's move along on to some other things, unless we have any other IKEA-related issues to talk about. Apparently not. Wayne, I'd like to come back to you with regard to the Monsanto-Syngenta situation. I'm not sure that everybody fully understands what was going on there. It was on again, off again. What was the problem in their relationship?
The bottom line, Syngenta wanted more money. Monsanto thought they hit a ceiling, didn't want to go above it. And they tried to sweeten the pot by saying if the deal does not get regulatory approval, we'll hand you, you know, a few billion dollars. And then they increased it again to a few more billion dollars. And Syngenta still said no. And from what I'm able to glean out of all the information that is still floating around out there, Syngenta believes that there are other companies out there that are interested in possibly taking them over, and they're waiting to see what the best deal may be. I think Bloomberg reported today that there may be some informal under-the-table talk, so to speak, between Monsanto and Syngenta going on. Once again, a Chinese company came out today and said, yeah, we might renew interest in seeing if we can hook up with Syngenta as well. But I think that's it. They wanted more money. They have more suitors out there, and they just didn't feel comfortable that the paycheck was big enough.
This is complicated stuff, though, and big, big, big bucks. Okay, Maria, back to you and talking about that North Side situation. Paul McKee's name invariably would have to come up in any discussion. He has somewhat dropped off the radar recently, it seems to me, although there are some legal issues that he's contending with.
Well, you know, right now what I'm watching really closely is that Mr. McKee owns more than 300 parcels within the proposed site for the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. He lost control of some of those parcels through a lawsuit, and about 46 of them were auctioned off. What's going on right now is the city has taken over some of the notes that Northside Regeneration, Paul McKee's company, owed for parcels on the north side. The city, the Land Clearance and Redevelopment Authority, has a deal pending with McKee for his land within the NGA site. And I think we're going to see within the next couple of weeks what that deal is. My guess is there's going to be some sort of swap for the land within that for the notes that he owed on other parcels.
What does this do to his whole Northside development project, though?
I think that the city really needs Northside Regeneration to survive. Mm-hmm. And what I've been told often is that in order to get the NGA, they have to show that there can be development around it. Mm-hmm. And he owns so much land, something like 2,000 parcels in the north side. So I think he's pretty important to what happens
there. But the momentum is still there for his project?
That's the question, and I can't answer it. I don't know. We'll see what this deal with the city, what it means. He's been proposing an urgent care hospital within the Pruitt-Igoe site. He has a $1 million option on that site. I think that's going to be included in the deal. I don't know that for certain. So it's you know, nothing has happened with Northside Regeneration.
He's got a lot of ideas.
A lot of things
that he's proposed, but nothing.
But he was very instrumental, he says, and I think the NGA would agree, in getting the NGA to consider the north side.
When is that decision going to be made?
It will be made, the final decision, in April. And it's a $1.6 billion project.
Big.
It is.
We have to take a break now. We're talking about business news in St. Louis over the last year with our business reporters, Maria Altman, Wayne Pratt, and Joseph Leahy. We'll come back and continue the conversation in just a moment. We have a few minutes left. If you have an issue or a question or comment you'd like to make, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you'd prefer to send us a tweet, do so at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll continue our conversation on business news, the year in review, with Maria Altman, Wayne Pratt, and Joseph Leahy. Is there a Ferguson component to this year's business news? Anyone see that?
Well, you know, there have been some things that have happened, some positives. Starbucks just broke ground last month on a new coffee shop, but a part of it will include training, and they're really going to focus on hiring from Ferguson and the surrounding area, including the store manager. And as I mentioned, there's going to be a training component where they can have people come in and learn how job skills. And so, you know, that's a positive for Ferguson. There was also ground broken on the Urban League's new, again, sort of job training center at the site of the Quick Trip that burned down. Mm-hmm. So some positives. And in talking with the mayor there, James Knowles, he says, really, we have more businesses than we did a year ago. And we're doing okay. We're doing well. But I think on that West Florissant Strip, you're still going to see some businesses that didn't survive the protests and some of the unrest.
Emerson and Centene were promising to bring some commerce into that area. Has that happened yet, or is that still on the
You know, I think that the money has flowed in from Emerson. Centene is in the midst of building a facility, I think it's a call center. They announced that pretty quickly after things right. happened in the last year, and so those are on track.
North County Transit Center, Joseph?
That's right. Yeah, is being built right now. It was actually in the works before a lot of the attention to Ferguson and the surrounding communities. But it is going to be based in Ferguson, actually. It's considered Metro's, you know, kind of one of the last centers of its hub-and-spoke bus system. You know, we've had these terminals all over the city and the county, but for some reason, just in that little area of North County, they didn't quite have that. And this is supposed to be ready by March of next year. It's on Pershaw Road. It was mostly funded by federal funds, but, you know, it's going to be maintained by Metro. And in addition to that, a big transformation will be seen is that Metro is changing its bus routes, or, you know, to a great degree, to accommodate for this new transit center. And I've been, you know, looking into how that's going to affect communities. It does seem like they are really going to be able to expand their service in North County, specifically in Ferguson and surrounding communities.
And of course, what's important about that is that people can get to jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's unemployment's been a huge issue in that area.
Without having to take a long trip, commute to get to work.
Absolutely.
And that's certainly important these days. And looking over some of the things that have happened during the past year, one is certainly attracted to what's happening to the coal industry over on the east side, and there are some problems over there. Who wants to grab that one?
Well, where do you start? First off, I think Arch Coal announced today that it has a 30-day grace period on a $90 million bond debt issue, so it's bought itself some more time. Most of the analysts you talk to are expecting some sort of bankruptcy filing really at any time when it comes to Arch Coal. Peabody has had its problems, but it's been restructuring debt and taking some really sharp measures to try to stay afloat. Those are just two of the companies, obviously, with strong ties here that are a big reflection of an industry that's really in trouble. And it will be interesting to see.
In trouble because?
Natural gas prices are lower. That's one of the main things, I think, and Maria's been looking into this too. I think that's one of the main ones, the natural gas prices, because the technology, whether you agree with it or not, has really made an impact on the overall industry.
Right. Natural gas prices have really made it much more competitive. And, you know, coal from sort of at the Appalachia area is just more expensive to get now. And so, you know.
And people are concerned about climate change.
And regulation is a part of it. And looking to the future of what regulation is going to be. And so it's hard to invest in clean power plants if you've got a cheap source right now. And, you know, even clean energy like wind power and solar is becoming a little bit more prevalent, taking up a bigger share. So, Peabody's stock prices have just plummeted in the last year. I mean, it's from like $100 a share down to about $7.25 today. Mm-hmm.
And look at oil prices, where they've gone. They're down around $45, I think, the last that I heard. And Illinois coal, not that they're mining everything in Illinois. They have properties elsewhere. Illinois coal is very dirty.
You know, compared to the rest of Appalachia, I think I think that coal can compete somewhat, but I think Wyoming, the Powder River Basin, is really where Peabody owns a lot of mines, is a little bit more competitive. But I know like Arch owns a lot in Appalachia, and that's not good for them.
That's not good. What about the steel industry also taking its lumps on the east side?
I think that's Wayne's area.
Yeah, I've been trying to track down officials with the steel workers and everything over the past couple of days. There's some sort of a tentative timeline for the idling of U.S. Steel's Granite City facility. And on the 21st, they're going to start the idling process. That's expected to take about 2 months. And then around the 27th, and this is all fluid, these dates could change, but on the 27th is when the layoffs are going to start, and over a certain period, roughly 2,000 workers with jobs in the Metro East are going to be out of work for an undetermined period. The steelworkers have not been told when that plant may reopen. So it's, Merry Christmas for the steelworkers out there. It's been a really tough year, a lot of uncertainty, and then they get this at the end of the year. It's just a capper in what's been a very tough year for them.
Boy, you don't have to go back too far to remember just how busy it was over there in Granite City with those foundries and what have you. It really was. Let's get to the area of innovation. We have just a little time remaining. This community, Maria, has really established itself as a community for entrepreneurship and innovation.
It has. It has. And I think there have been some real positives in the last year. One thing that I just covered within the last month is Launch Code, a sort of a center focused on helping train more coders and get more IT folks here in St. Louis. They opened up a new center on Delmar. That's sort of a mentor center. The biotech industry and startups there have seen a lot more investment this year. I spoke with folks at BioGenerator, one of the incubators, and they had brought in like $120 million in Series A funding. So that's a big deal for St. Louis because we're bringing in outside investment, venture capital from the coasts, and becoming really well known for biotech.
What is the attraction here for people like this?
Well, I think for biotech in general, it's the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center. Mm-hmm. It's Monsanto. It's Washington University and St. Louis University, and just all of that knowledge in one place, and people able to kind of move back and forth between creating new businesses and selling those businesses even to some of the big ag industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great to see St. Louis putting itself on the map in this area.
It
absolutely is. One other area we'll get to as the time will allow, and that is it's gotten a lot of publicity, and I guess it's stymied in the courts right now, and that's Uber. Where are we with Uber?
We're waiting for which ruling according to which lawsuit and all that.
Yeah, apparently, I mean, at this point, Uber drivers are out there providing the UberX service. That's while Uber has an antitrust lawsuit against the Metropolitan Taxi Cab Commission, and then the MTC also has a countersuit. I think they're in negotiations right now. They've been ordered to at least until after the new year. It remains to be seen how this will play out. I do know that from a political standpoint, Mayor Francis Slay has directed the police department just to kind of to not target Uber drivers. There's no reason to, and I think County Executive Steve Stenger has also taken a pretty hands-off approach, saying we're not going to be deliberately going out of our way to cite drivers for this reason.
Are you finding, as I am, more and more people are talking about Uber and utilizing it and saying it's the greatest thing since sliced
bread?
Well,
I was kind of trying to figure out for myself, was this really a big deal? But when my older sister said, "Oh, I'll just use Uber," when she was flying into St. Louis, I went, "Oh." Oh, really? Because, she's not what I'd call an early adopter. Mm. So, yeah, I think it is a big deal. And in the innovation community, they really have rallied around Uber and been saying that this shows St. Louis as kind of being, innovative.
Being St. Louis in so many ways. I find that a lot of young people that that I'm acquainted with are using it on Friday and Saturday nights. They go out and they party, and you know, rather than risk driving home if they've been imbibing, they give Uber a call. Okay, in time that's left, I'll start, Joseph, with you and then work way across. What's on your radar for the next next months in 2016?
Well, personally, I really have a keen interest in this North County Transit Center and just seeing how Metro is going to roll that out, how that's going to impact this area, North County, specifically in Ferguson around there. You know, it really that kind of service being in that area, I think it's really a great service for the area. But if you're talking about the big stories next year, I'm afraid it's going to have to be either for Wayne or Maria to talk about. You know, North City is really what's going to happen, where we're really going to see some big moves. And I hope that they can maybe give us some, you know, especially with whether there will be or won't be a new NFL stadium, whether there will be or won't be a National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. This is like this pivotal year where it's going to say St. Louis went this way or went that way at that point. At this point.
Wayne, what about you?
I agree with what you said about the pivotal year, but my mind is always too much on beer. So I'm going to be very closely watching AB InBev, the SAB Miller deal, how that gets through the regulatory process, not just in the states, but may even be more impressive to watch or compelling to watch would be the better word in other countries, especially China. That's going to be a big deal, what they may have to unload in China to get some regulatory approval there. So that's the main thing I'm going to be watching.
And we'll see what impact all of that has on the craft beer industry here and elsewhere.
I learned this morning that there might be a hop shortage, which could impact everything. We'll see how that plays out. Just fascinating.
Oh, dear.
This is serious, folks. Maria?
I have to say the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, I will be watching that very closely. And also what happens with, you know, Northside regeneration in general. I echo what Joe says. It is a pivotal year. And whether some of the cities, dare I say, gambles pay off.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got the right people covering all this stuff. I want to thank you all so much for being with us. Maria Altman, Wayne Pratt, and Joseph Leahy, great to see you again. Keep up the good work. And coming up next, the Penrose Park Velodrome is showing its age. What now? This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.